Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Joining us now is a best-selling author of Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, but right now has Brother John out, August Turek. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Oh, it's my privilege. Thank you.
So I want to talk about your journey, the journey that led you to where you are today. From what I understand, you used to be in the business world but left that sort of thing, and you started to learn from Trappist monks. And really, can we talk about that transformation and how that changed
Sure.
your life?
But there was really an overlap there. I was, first of all, my primary focus in my whole life has been spirituality. I like to tell people like to think that I'm a businessman who happened to be interested in spirituality, but actually I considered myself a spiritual seeker mm-hmm. who happened to have a profound interest in business on the side. But anyway, I was coaching back in the early 1990s, I started coaching college students. Mm-hmm. And in 1996, I started my own business with a couple other guys in 1993, and we were building the business up. And in 1996, these kids talked me into going skydiving.
Mm.
And as I like to say, I was brave enough to jump out of an airplane, but not brave enough to tell them I didn't want to jump out of no darn airplane. So anyway, I jumped out of the airplane, and I smashed my ankle to smithereens.
Ugh.
And I ended up in the hospital and ended up having these profound panic attacks. And I didn't know where they were coming from until I finally realized I was facing my mortality for the first time. I wasn't ready to die. And even though I knew that this ankle was going to kill me, I knew that, you know, not too far down the road, they were going to be telling me, I'm sorry, Mr. Turek, but there's nothing more we can do for you. And I wasn't ready to die. And even all the spirituality that I'd done ever since college didn't seem to be there when I needed it. And this launched me on what I now call my two-year dark night of the soul, because when I got out of the hospital, the panic attacks went away, but I was still extremely depressed. Mm. And a few months later, I got a telephone call from another one of my college students telling me he was spending the summer at a Trappist monastery called Mepkin Abbey in Charleston, right outside of Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And before I knew it, I had asked him if I could come. And he went and said, well, let me ask Brother John. And that was the first time I ever heard Brother John's name.
Mm-hmm.
I went down that weekend. I went back the next. I was blown away. I went back the next weekend and the next weekend. And then I applied for what is called a monastic guest status, where you can actually become a part-time monk, and you live with the monks and you work with them. And So over Christmas of 1996, I made an arrangement to go down there for a whole month and get up at 3 in the morning with them and work alongside of them all day. And it was during this Christmas that I had this encounter on Christmas Eve, actually, with Brother John, which later became my book.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Part-time monk. I guess I don't know the classifications. So of a Trappist monk, do they live in a community together? And
yes, they live in a they're a branch of the Benedict. They live the rule of St. Benedict. And they live in a community. The Trappists are like the Marine Corps of monks. They're the ones that before Vatican II would keep silence. And, their motto is Ora et Labora, which means prayer and work. And they have a business. All the monasteries have businesses that they use to support themselves. So when you're not going to church 8 times a day and praying in silence on your own, you're out working. At the time I started going down there, they had 40,000 monks had 40,000 chickens, and they would take the eggs and sell the eggs to the grocery stores and the restaurants in the area. And that's where I would work with them. I would work on their chicken farm with them.
It's a lot of chickens. Well, when you said you walked onto the campus for the first time, you're blown away. What blew you away about it?
Well, there was I'll give you just a real quick story. It was the kindness. And it was confrontational. It was the kindness, the gentleness, the peace, the tranquility. One of the very first times I was there, I was behind this like 90-year-old monk. He was like 88 years old. I later got to know him. His name was Brother Gregory, and he was in front of me in line, and getting it was like a smorgasbord, you know, cafeteria style. and he bent over to get one of the trays that were stacked below the counter, and it seemed to take him forever. And I noticed that I was getting impatient, saying, come on, thinking to myself, come on, you know. And when he finally retrieved this hard-earned tray, he turned around with a big smile and gave it to me.
Huh. How about that?
And I thought, and I was blown away because I thought, my God, here I am, irritated because this old man has taken so much time, when really, and all the effort it took him, his joy was in giving his hard-earned tray away. Mm-hmm. And I was ashamed, you know. And so there was just a whole bunch of things, little things that happened like that, that just opened my eyes to a whole different way of living. And then, of course, I got nailed when Christmas came around, and I had this encounter with Brother John. And what happened was that about 6 or 7 years later, some of my college students challenged me to enter an essay contest. The Templeton Foundation had a contest called the Power of Purpose Essay Contest, and they goaded me into writing something for it. And I'd never written anything for publication before, and this contest was open to previously published material and professional writers, and I looked it up, and I only had a week to write an article, to write my essay, and it had been going on for a year and a half. But I started trying to do it anyway, and I wasn't getting anywhere. Another one of my students said, why don't you just write that story about Brother John and that encounter you had with him on Christmas Eve that you love telling us about? So I wrote it up in like 2 days, 48 hours, and I polished it for another 24 hours, and I sent it off and forgot about it. And then 6 months later, I got a telephone call that I had won the $100,000 grand prize.
Wow. Isn't it amazing? You forget about something like that, and you just don't know if you're going to get a response or not. You kind of write it off. You think, that was fun to do, but there's no way they'll ever get back to me.
So that transformed my life. So I became it was republished in the Best of Christian and the Best of Catholic Writings. And then I happened to write something about why I thought the Trappist monks were great at business. And because I thought to myself, hey, I, by this time, had sold my businesses, and I was thinking, why are these guys so good at business? They're 65 years old on average. They don't care about business. They only work 4 hours a day. They work in silence, but everything they touch turns to gold. Why is that? Mm-hmm. And I wrote what I thought was a white paper, and somebody gave it to an editor at Forbes, and he published it as a four-part article in Forbes magazine. It went viral and was a smash hit, and that led to an invitation for me to become a leadership contributor for Forbes, and as well, then I got a telephone call from Columbia Business School saying, how about turning that into a book?
Wow.
And that's how I ended up writing Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks as well.
Wow.
So everything has been this series of happy accidents, beginning with my skydiving accident.
How's your ankle feel today?
It's doing great. And I really sincerely can say that the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life was smashing my ankle in that skydiving accident.
Did you have to get some pins put in?
I got 12 pins in there.
Oh, 12 pins. Is it enough to ache when it's about to rain?
Nope. I never have any problem with it at all. The Lord stayed with me so far. Now it's been 23 years.
We're going to continue our conversation with August Turek. He has a new book called Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim in the Purpose of Life. His time that he spent at a monastery with Trappist monks, some unbelievable stories and life lessons learned there. We'll ask him that next on Overnight America KMOX. Overnight America. Joining us is a very special guest, someone that spent time at a monastery, not as a Trappist monk, but among them. August Turek is someone that wrote Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, but Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim in the Purpose of Life. When you first walked in and you met Brother John, how did they conduct themselves in a way that you knew something special was going on there?
Well, let me tell you and your audience real quickly what happened on this. I think this sums it all up on Christmas Eve. So it's Christmas Eve. This is 1996. I'm down there at the monastery. I'm there because I'm going through the mother of midlife crises. I'm not there just because I'm for the fun of it. And on Christmas Eve at the monastery is the same as almost any other day. You get up at 3 in the morning. You go to church 8 times a day. You work all day long. But the only difference is instead of going to bed at 8 o'clock at night, you stay up because mass. There's a Christmas mass at 8 o'clock that goes to about 10, and then afterwards they have a very rare thing. They have a party, and they serve cookies and cakes and apple cider, etc. And so I went to this party, and all of a sudden I realized I'm dead on my feet. It's 11 o'clock at night. I've been up since 3 in the morning. And I head for the door to get back to my room, and it's pounding down rain on the roof. And it's 38 degrees outside. All I've got is my monastic surplice that I wear when I'm there. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to get soaked, and then I won't be able to, you know, be soaked from tomorrow morning, too. And as I open the door, the light pours out. And suddenly I realize there's somebody standing under an umbrella outside. And I see that it's Brother John. And I said, Brother John, what are you doing? And he said, I'm here to walk anybody who forgot their umbrella back to their room.
Mm. Wow.
And he starts walking me back to my room, and I'm just blown away, Ryan. I'm thinking, my God, this man works harder than anybody. He's been a monk for 50 years. He gets one party a year, and he would rather stand outside in 38-degree weather just in case some bozo like me forgot his umbrella, then enjoy a party. Where does that kind of love come from? And that's what led to my, you know, the beginning of my transformation, if you want to talk about it, and also later to my writing career.
You know, when you talk about the transformation that you went through, and you start to put some of these stories down, and you start to reflect on some of these, let's talk about the permanent transformation you had. It sounds like it's nothing temporary, and it sounds like that sometimes when people have these moments, it's, you know, it's all fun for a little bit, and then they go and they revert back to the way they used to be.
Right.
How has it been permanent for you, or how do you credit it to be something that has been a life-changing experience?
Well, I would say there's two ways that I would evaluate that for myself. Number one is that I battled severe depression on and off for my whole life, from the time I was like 14 years old. And and I was very, very successful in my career, but I had to fight off bouts of severe depression. And this panic attack that I had triggered a very, very deep depression. But in 1998, I had a spiritual experience 2 years after, you know, after working with the monks for the 2 years, I had this spiritual experience. And since 1998 till this day, I've never had one moment of depression.
Wow.
So I can say that. The other thing is I can just see it in my behavior. What I call the transformation that I'm talking about, when people say, okay, you had to answer the question, what is the purpose of life in 3,500 words? What is the purpose of life? Mm-hmm. Well, my point is the purpose of life for you, me, for everyone is exactly the same. We are here on this planet to become the best human being we can possibly be. And I define that as self-transcendence. And then I go on beyond that to define self-transcendence as the transformation from selfishness to selflessness. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And I go on to say that all life is longing for everything in life. All motivation is longing for transformation. An acorn is longing to become an oak, not to learn to be an oak, but to become one. And a caterpillar longs to become a butterfly, not to learn butterflyness, but to become a butterfly. But there's three kinds of transformation. When a thirsty man drinks, he transforms his condition. When a poor man hits the lottery, he transforms his circumstances. But when Mr. Scrooge wakes up on Christmas morning, an utterly new man, he has experienced a transformation of being.
Mm.
And a transformation of being is permanent.
Yeah. You know, I've always looked at that, too, a proof. Always people say, you know, how can you prove that God exists? And there's people that doubt the existence of it all. And I look at the way some people have transformed in their lives and say, how can you argue anyone's capable of doing that on their own?
I
mean, just knowing what human nature is.
100%.
Yeah, and there's something bigger and more special going on there. Just think of everyone's human nature, of how easy it is for them to ignore these things or revert back or be lazy or, you know, be too scared or whatever it is. Just the mere existence that these transformations exist, I think, is proof alone that God works in people.
God works in people, but also we have to meet him halfway, because it means putting a lot of effort and energy and work in from our end as well to try and live You know, as Aristotle said, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence is not a choice, it's a habit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to become a different person, you behave like a different person, you do it over and over and over again, so that the becoming process is, you know, becomes hardwired into you. It's like perfecting the golf swing, you know.
Hmm.
A great golfer like Tiger Woods doesn't have a golf swing. He is a golf swing.
Wow.
And we have to get to a point where this selflessness, you know, as I say in my book about business, I said the more successfully we forget our selfish motivations, the more successful we shall become. Mm-hmm. It's in our own self-interest to forget our self-interest.
Wow.
The more selfless you are, the more successful you'll be in every area of your life.
Do you own any chickens?
No, I don't. It's funny that you bring that up, though, because I do own a 75-acre farm. But I don't own any chickens. We tried to have some ducks around here a few years ago, and the varmints ate them faster than we could bring them in.
Oh, no.
We brought five or six flocks of ducks in, and each time we did, the foxes and the raccoons ate and chewed them up as fast as we could bring them in.
Oh, man.
But I have cattle. I have cows at the farm here.
Okay. Well, that's something else. That gives you something to tend to. And probably gives you some things that gives you some alone time where you can be quiet and do your things. How often do you find yourself trying to replicate some of those same feelings you had at the monastery at your own home?
I don't try at all. Mm-hmm. And you know, there was when I went away to study theology a few years ago, and this woman gave us a little homily one day, and it's kind of corny, but I liked it a lot. You know, she took the quote from the Bible. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be. I am now the person that I am all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to get, you know, I don't try to put myself in this position or put myself in that position. This is the miracle that I could probably write another book about what has happened in my life since I went to the monastery and started working with the monks and the spiritual experience that I alluded to earlier. I just live my life, and I see the same thing with the monks. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just are who they are, and they aren't trying to find, you know, put themselves in this special mood or find this special place. And it's a wonderful way to live. Mm-hmm. I think one of the greatest, somebody asked me not too long ago on a podcast what my greatest achievement was in my life, and I said, you know, I was going into the gym 3 or 4 years ago, and some guy handed me a towel, which was interesting because I've never seen the man before, and they don't usually hand you a towel. They just have a box of them, and you pick one out. And this man goes to hand me a towel, and I reach out to grab it, and he wouldn't let go of it. And he suddenly just said to me, if you could be anywhere, doing anything, where would you be, doing what, right now? And without a second's hesitation, I said, I'd be right here doing this right now.
Hmm.
And as I walked down the hallway to the locker room, I realized my eyes had filled with tears. Mm-hmm. And I realized that that answer had come from the very bottom of my being. Yeah, every minute of every day, in some mysterious way, I feel like I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing with my life.
Wow. You know, if people wanted to check out your new book, Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life, where can they find it?
Well, they can find it in a lot of bookstores around the country, but obviously the most, and they can come to my website, which is augustturek.com, August like the month, Turek, T as in Tom, U-R-A-K, which is one word, augustturek.com, or, you know, the good old favorite, it's on Amazon.
And, the old favorite, huh?
Yeah. Who, you can always get it on Amazon.
Who did the illustrations and the paintings here?
Well, that's a wonderful story. I'm so proud of that. I mean, what happened was that over the years, people kept sending me letters telling me what a wonderful effect this essay that I had written had on them, and I wouldn't even know where they'd found it because over the years, it became harder and harder to even find the essay. And then it got two years in August, a man showed up at my farm. He was he was an executive at BB&T Bank, mm-hmm. and he said his wife had walked out on him. And he was madly in love with his wife, didn't have an inkling anything was wrong with the relationship, but she just left him. And he hit the skids, and he got suicidal, and he found my essay, Brother John, and that had won the contest, and it really helped him, and that sent him to the monastery, and he lived with the monks for 2 months, took a sabbatical. That turned his life around, and so as he was leaving the monastery, he asked Brother John specifically how he could come up to my house just to thank me. And he drove all the way 6 hours just to thank me for writing it. So I said to him at the time, I said, you're not the first person. I said, so I'm very flattered and humbled, but I also feel guilty. And he said, why would you feel guilty? I said, because I feel like I have a candle, a profound candle that's under a bushel basket because it seems to help people, but no one knows about it. So as soon as he left, I have a nonprofit corporation, so all of the proceeds from my books and my lecturing and anything in this field, I donate to my charity.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who runs it, I said, we got to act on the intuition that I had. So I said, well, if we have a 3,500-word essay, it's not long enough to be a book, even with an introduction and a preface, which it has as well. But what if it was an illustrated book? What if So I got in touch with this guy. His name is Glenn Harrington. And I never have met him to this day. I've never met Glenn Harrington. And he got very excited about doing the paintings. But I didn't know anything about painting, and I didn't know whether he was the right man for the job. So I called my nephew, who works for Scholastic in New York, and I asked him to check this guy out. And he called me back the next day and said, my God, Augie, Glenn Harrington's famous. All the top publishers use him. He's illustrated 400 books. We pay him $15,000 for one cover for one book. And he's going to do 22 oil paintings for you? He said, grab it. So Glenn and I collaborated. So we got a $100,000 Templeton Prize-winning essay combined with 22 oil paintings from a multiple award-winning artist named Glenn Harrington. And the reviews for the paintings have just been fantastic. It's been almost more gratifying to me than hearing that people like the essay.
Wow. That's an awesome story. So the book, again, Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life, you can check it out on Amazon. Go check it out. If you heard any of the stories today, if any of them touched you, this is definitely worth checking out or maybe even gifting to someone you know. August Turek, thank you so much for sharing your stories here today on KMOX.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric Guest Line on Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Yeah, what a mess this morning. Roads were terrible across St. Louis and closing down the interstates. 100 and some reported crashes. Are we going to see a repeat of that? Joining us now is AccuWeather meteorologist Matt Rindy.
Hey, my pleasure. Nice to be here.
It was pretty messy here in St. Louis this morning. The ice came down. People were sliding off. There was like, I think the one report by a little after noon, 111 reported accidents or something like that across the area. There was a lot.
Yeah, it
was very icy. I don't know where this ice came from.
Probably began a little earlier than the people who arrived at church. Dang it.
Yeah. Well, what happened today, pretty much all the church services were canceled because of that.
And, oh, very good.
Yeah, even if the roads were salted, the parking lots were not, so it made it nearly impossible to try to get into this. And traveling was just a mess. They were closing the interstates down. So what we found out was that they tried to treat the roads, but it didn't matter in a time like this. I think they said that the way it was coming down is pretty much just washing away any of the treatment they were putting on. So with the way this came down, was it sleeting and then it froze? Or what was the, do you know what happened earlier today?
Yeah. It does look like it was just very cold to start. A little bit of sleet mixed in, a little bit of snow as well. And that is hard to overcome for a time, even with a little bit of, as you said, a little bit of product on the roads to help prevent the icing. So a cold start, and then as you point out as well, it washes away a little bit. It didn't look all that heavy, but maybe just heavy enough to get everything slid to the side. And with the roads, temperatures still very cold from the day before and the night before that, you know, it's really hard to manage that type of weather.
Yeah, and I'm not going to admit I'm a good person for doing this, but when I let the dog out in the back, we have this patio, he immediately took about 3 steps, lost his footing, and slipped. And I laughed, and I couldn't help it. No, I wish it was. I'd have been playing that over and over. We would have handed that over to America's Funniest Home Videos. I thought it was hilarious. He did not. My dog did not think it was funny. So the second time he went out, he was much more careful. He learned from his mistake the first time around.
All right, smart.
What are we going to see through the overnight? Are we going to see a repeat of that, or is there a chance of a repeat?
No, I think we're looking in pretty good shape as we move through the overnight hours. Temperatures in the mid-30s, pretty much going to hold steady, maybe even rise a little bit as we move through the early morning hours. So I think we're looking to be in pretty good shape for the Monday morning commute.
Oh, we were worried here if it was going to be another one of those days where everyone's going to have to work from home. They're going to have to cancel everything off. We've had enough of those days the last couple of weeks with as low as the temperatures were getting. what, 2 weeks ago, where we saw those bitterly cold temperatures. School were canceled for a couple days there. And I thought, oh, great. Now they're going to miss another day because of the ice. But originally, I was looking at some of the forecasting. They were afraid that maybe north of the city it could get hit with something. But is that still the case?
I think you have to get pretty far north at this point. It looks like the storm system will stay fairly warm in and around the area, but maybe as you get toward the Iowa border, we're a little more dicey.
Yeah, so you got to go pretty far out before you start seeing something like that.
Yeah, I think you have to get pretty far up there for the rest of this this particular storm system.
So what's it going to take to see another one of those days? Is it just a couple of cold days in a row followed up with some rain?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And, I mean, we're not out of the woods by any means. Given a look at the weather pattern going forward. I mean, we're going to see temperatures here for the next few days, mostly above freezing. Tomorrow night will drop below, but by Wednesday, back up into the 50s, Thursday into the 50s. So that'll feel pretty nice. Unfortunately, colder weather returns on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and each with the risk of some snow, at least on Friday. I think a better chance comes in next Sunday. So
yeah, what's up with that? We're going to get a 50 day here and there, a couple, and throw those in, then it gets right back down to cold.
Yeah, I mean, the pattern itself is just amazingly cold from west to east. We really don't have any particular area, maybe the southeast, that is above average, but everybody else, I mean, Seattle's had 8 inches of snow. That's well above average for their regular snowfall, and they're going to get another couple of events here this week. It's all the way cold all the way down into Southern California. They're getting reports of snow in some of the lower mountains there, which is, again, not atypical, but it is unusual.
Well, who's to blame here? Is it Canada?
Oh, we always blame Canada for the cold.
Of course it is.
If we're going to build a wall, let's build one there and keep the cold out.
Yeah, how do we prevent that from happening? Is there any of the secret meteorologist tricks you know to manipulate the weather that we can use?
I wish there were. I would make so much more money.
Weather manipulator, Matt Rindy.
Gosh.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something?
Wedding planners alone would sign me up.
Be like the Godfather. They'd be coming in asking for favors.
Oh,
you know?
You bet.
So really, we're gonna see this up and down stuff, and this really throws off the averages. I like looking at a good average, but when you get these bitterly cold, and then you add a couple of warm days in, man, that throws everything off. That drives me crazy.
Average is average. Sometimes you have the warmer days. Sometimes you have the colder days, and somewhere in the middle is where we usually end up.
Somewhere in the middle. Average is average.
Yeah.
Isn't that like the saying of life?
Yes, right.
Okay, so hopefully we're gonna get through this. I don't think that it's going to be too bad. My wife was always worried. She says, oh, you're going to get off the show later tonight, and she's going to be worried sick because, you know, driving through the ice. But I'm glad I'm not going to have to do that tonight.
No, I think you're in good shape.
Good.
We're in good shape.
Still, don't hot dog it, of course.
Right. That's true on any given day.
Yeah. What's it like in Montana right now? The last update, there was some bitterly cold temperatures in Montana. It was still in the below zero range. I forgot what the city was called, but like northern Montana, there was a city.
Was it Havre?
No. I'm just curious.
Billings?
No.
It's below zero.
Is it still zero in Montana?
Well, yeah, below zero in Billings.
Hmm.
Great Falls?
No.
Cut Bank?
I wish I could remember. I don't know my geography enough to know all my cities. I know there was radio stations there, which has surprised me.
Yes.
It was far north, and I could look in a map and find it, but it doesn't matter. I was so worried about them. 20 below zero. Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
Feel terrible for those guys up there. All right, so don't hot dog it, but we're going to get a couple of warm days, but don't get used to it by next weekend. It's just going to get cold again.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately.
All right. Well, do you have any good news, at least?
March is around the corner.
Did you get your Girl Scout cookie order in?
Oh, you bet I did.
All right. Have they been delivered yet?
No.
No, I haven't seen them yet here either. That's the next thing. Well, at least we got that to look forward to.
Oh, yeah. 5 boxes, baby.
You did 5 boxes for yourself?
Well, I got a family of 4, so we'll split them up.
Okay. What kinds you get?
The Do-Si-Dos, Thin Mints, Troifles, and I can't remember the third one, the third one was called, or fourth one.
You did not get the Samoas?
No.
Those are the best ones.
Is that the one with the coconut?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I can't, I don't like the coconut.
Oh, geez, they're the only ones that I love. I can eat a box of those in one sitting, no problem.
Everything else I can as well, but not the Samoas, just don't like coconut.
Matt.
I know.
I knew you.
it's one of my few failings.
You know, yeah. When we get them in, I'll know, because we'll have the orders come through, and it's like the little bookies come through. They're gonna break your kneecaps if you don't pay up immediately. So I'll know. So Matt, we'll keep an eye out for those Girl Scout cookie boxes, and maybe the next time we talk, we'll be stuffing our face with them.
Yes, I hope so. That'd be great.
Matt Rindy, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
All right, you're welcome.
You know, it's good to have him on. At least I'm not too concerned about driving home after the show here. We're off at 2 with Our American Stories kicking off at 2 o'clock. One more segment left, and I had something that I found on Fox News I wanted to share with you. It's pretty gross. Actually, it's really gross. It's on KMOX. Overnight America. I'm going to play something really gross for you that was on Fox and Friends earlier in the morning, Sunday morning. One of their hosts, Pete Hegseth, admitted a few things. One, he admitted that he eats day-old leftover pizza that has not been refrigerated. So apparently on the set of Fox, they got Pizza Hut or something a day or two earlier. Never been put in the fridge. He went up and was eating it, said no problem. Which is kind of weird. So National Pizza Day was on Saturday. Sunday morning comes around. He's eating the pizza. What? Okay. You're on Fox News. I know you're not doing it for free. Is it really worth risking your health putting day-old, unrefrigerated Pizza Hut pizza that's been passed over by probably 400 other people safe? That's not the grossest thing. If you thought that was going to be the grossest thing, listen to what host Pete Hegseth admitted on the show. Oh, hold on. I got to bring the volume up here. Sorry. Let me start it over again. Take a listen.
As I told you, my 2019 resolution is to say things on air that I say off air. I don't think I've washed my hands for 10 years. Really, I don't really wash my hands ever.
Someone help me.
No, I inoculate myself. It's just not, germs are not a real thing. I can't see them. Therefore, they're not real.
So you're becoming immune to all of the
exactly.
Bacteria.
Exactly. I can't get sick.
Oh, no. He did not just say he hasn't washed his hands in 10 years. That is so gross. Oh, how old is he? He's not like 3. Oh, and he's goes around shaking people's hands. Oh, no, man. Oh, that's gross. Oh, man. All right, Bree. Hopefully you'll say something here that's not as gross. Hello, Bree.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I have some statistics for you that'll blow you away.
Ooh, about what?
Well, I heard you on Friday night struggling with paying $7 for a Valentine card for your wife.
It's too much money.
Well, that's what on Consumers Report, that's what the average person is spending for their dog is $7.
On Valentine's Day?
On Valentine's, the average male consumer will spend $279, and the average female consumer will spend $97. And of that, $7 will be for their dog and $29 for associates.
For a what? Associates. Oh, okay.
For their associates.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't think I've ever bought Valentine's Day stuff for the people I work with. I don't know why I would.
Well, I guess, with the people I work with.
Or maybe like
bosses for their bosses, for their secretaries or whatever.
Maybe. I'm
but
not
I
big into that.
I have a good idea for you.
Oh, great. I need it.
Well, you could play My Funny Valentine. Have Ben to play My Funny Valentine and dedicate it to your wife.
My Funny Valentine?
My Funny Valentine.
What is that?
I think it's a song. It's Barbara Streisand sings it beautifully.
Hmm. Interesting.
Don't change your hair for me, not if you care for me.
My
Funny Valentine.
Have never heard that one.
Song.
Okay.
You've never heard My Funny Valentine?
No, I haven't. That's a new one to me.
Where have you been?
Barbara Streisand was not really in my wheelhouse of songs. It wasn't on my playlist.
Oh, well, that's true. You were still in your playpen when she was famous.
Yeah, I would have been. And then even then, my parents never listened to her either, so that was pretty much out of the household.
But the words, well, there may be some other people that sing it, but the words to it are just really beautiful.
Hmm, okay, I'll take a look.
And if you dedicated it to your loving wife over the radio, then I think you would get away with a lot.
You think so?
I think so.
You never know. I don't know what I'm able to get away with anymore. I feel like I'm lost when it comes to Valentine's Day because everyone really jumped on me for saying I didn't want to spend $7 on a Valentine's Day card. I'm definitely going to go to Dollar Tree and get two for a dollar. I think I'm going to nail the Mother's Day and Valentine's Day cards at the same time. Just get them two for a dollar.
You know what?
And get done with it.
I think you better use the excuse that you forgot rather than take her a 50-cent.
I don't think the back of the card will say 50 cents. I think even though I buy it at a discount, it may look as if it was expensive. That's the whole point of it.
Well, I spent like $6 or $7 for Valentine's cards, but I did buy them at the Dollar General.
Good, that's the way to do it.
Beautiful cards.
Better than what I've done in the past, so I think this will be an upgrade going to the dollar store when it comes to the cards. Maybe I'll find one, and everyone will be impressed, and everyone will go there from now on. You know, why pay $7 for something when you can get it for 50 cents?
Well, all of your other radio hosts on the radio are advertising 2 dozen roses for $24.
Oh, is that right? They're doing the commercials right now for that?
Yeah, you can use their promo code.
You know, that used to be really popular, Valentine's Day promo codes. They used to do, like, the teddies, were the teddy bears and things, and then they used to do, like, the pajamas. But you don't hear that as much anymore.
I got a pair of those pajamas. Of course, it's been some time ago, maybe 10 years.
Were they good?
Oh, yeah, they were wonderful. Like, they had feet in them, you know.
Oh, like you wearing
like the little kids, and it tipped up, and it was
onesies.
They were real furry.
So you had a kid's onesie you were walking around with. Oh, that's
right.
Funny. Oh, that's great. I like that. All right, Bree, thank you so much for the tips. I appreciate that.
All right, I'm listening, Ryan.
I know
every
you
night.
Are. I'm glad you are. Thank you, Bree.
You're like family.
Aw, thank you, Bree. I appreciate that.
You can't imagine how many of us are out here that we don't have much family anymore, and I really connect with you. I think you're very personable.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. And you know, I know that there's a lot of those connections we make here, and I don't take that lightly.
Yeah, and you know, when you're listening to the other people that call in, and then they don't call in for a while, you begin to worry. You wonder what happened to them.
Yeah, I worried about you there for a while. Every once in a while, you'd call. Sometimes it'd be a month would pass, and I wouldn't hear from you. I'd get a little worried. But it's good to know that you listen, so you'll hear those shout-outs when I bring you up.
I had a dog that I loved very much, and he developed a heart murmur.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to take care of him, but I lost him on January the 25th.
Mm. Hate to hear that.
And I raised him from the day that he was five. He was only 5 days old when I got him.
Mm.
He didn't even have his eyes open.
Aww.
And he was only 5 years old. And it really set me back. Because he was such a companion to me, he slept with me every night, and he was he was just really connected with me. I was his mama.
Well, you did good for that dog. You did good.
I tried.
Yeah.
If I'd had $1,500, I might could have saved him. They could have operated on him, but I didn't have the $1,500. Mm.
I understand, and that's not even a guarantee. I mean,
no, it wasn't.
No,
they said they might even lose him on the operating table.
Mm. Hey, Bree, it's, you know, I think you've done everything you can, and just know that that dog's life was better for being with you, and don't discount that either.
Well, I truly believe that dogs do go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I've read in the Bible, it says Solomon said that they did, that they go to heaven.
Where did he say that?
He said, of man, we know that he goes up, mm-hmm. but of animals, we do not know whether they go up or whether they go down. In other words, I believe that that means that if they have a relationship with a human being, that they probably go up.
Hmm.
But if they were a wild animal and never had a relationship or a spirit with a human, that they would go down.
Mm.
Just in other words,
yeah.
I'm not saying down to hell. I'm
yeah.
saying down into the earth.
Sure.
But I don't think that I don't think an animal that has a relationship with you that practically speaks to you by perception.
Yeah.
I don't think that. I wouldn't want to be in heaven without them.
Bree, you know, I feel like heaven will be so great, you won't even think about things like that. You won't even have to think about things like that. But we.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I think you won't even be bothered by things like that. All right, Bree, we got to end the show for tonight. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you too.
Good night,
Bree.
We'll see you again tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, Overnight America.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.